Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 29th day of July 2016. It's the last trading day of the month. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Eric Snodgrass will join us a little bit early to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. He has a look forward into the month of August, that soybean-making month in the United States. And I'll rerun the interview that we did with Daryl Good earlier in the week. Thought that might be worth a second listen. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We hear the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. September corn up 3.25 cents, $3.34.5 the settlement price. December 3.42¾ up 4. The March 4 higher at 3.51½, and May corn up 4 cents at 3.57¼. August soybeans a gain today, up 29 cents, $10.32½ their settlement price. September up 26¾ at 10.20. The November new crop settled above $10 at $10.03 even, up 25 cents. January at $10.03 as well, up 24.5, and March at $9.92, up 24 cents. Bean oil 86 cents higher at $30.35. The bean meal up $8.50 at $350. September soft red winter wheat 2.5 lower. December down 1½ cents, and July of next year down 1¾ cents. It settled at $4.80½. The July hard red at $4.72¾, up 0.5 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the August at $113.20. That's a dollar, or rather 12.5 cents lower. And the feeders down 42.5 at $140 and a nickel. Lean hogs for the day up 12.5 cents in the August at $68.97.5. Some of the outside markets: Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour at 18,370, down 6 points, and the U.S. dollar trading at 95.565 is down 1.156. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org, on demand anytime you'd like. Again, the website address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. This past week was 4 degrees above normal, with widespread rains totaling 1.1 inches across the state. That's about 50% above normal. We are close to wrapping up July. The statewide average temperature was close to normal, with the recent hot weather balanced out by the cold start to July. The statewide average rainfall was 6.7 inches and the third wettest July on record. It's also about double the average July rainfall. The heaviest rains were in western and southeastern Illinois, with amounts of 7 to 12 inches, and virtually the entire state was above normal in the rainfall, with no major dry areas. According to the National Weather Service, the heat and humidity will continue in Illinois this weekend and next week. Highs this weekend will be in the upper 70s and low 80s in the north, and the mid to upper 80s in central and southern Illinois. Temperatures will be slowly rising during the week. By Wednesday and Thursday, highs will be in the upper 80s in the northern and central part of the state, and in the low 90s in the south. There are chances of rain every day. Rainfall totals over the next 5 days have the potential to be in the 0.5 inch to 1.5 inch range. However, this rain will be in the form of thunderstorms, so it could be hit and miss on the rainfall. The forecast for the second week out suggests that the temperatures will be a little cooler and close to normal, while rainfall is expected to be below normal. This is state climatologist Jim Angel.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, now joins us for this last trading day of the month of July, the 29th. Thanks, Mike, for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
It was a really nice end of kind of a rough week in Chicago. Futures finished higher for both the corn and the soybeans.
Yeah, and you know, soybean weather and demand, I think both brought some nice and much needed support back to the prices. You know, even though we had pretty dismal weekly export sales, especially for the 15-16 crop, we still at the same time had almost daily reporting of 15-16 soybean exports by USDA announced at the top of the hour around 8 o'clock Central Time when they normally come out. And I think that really helped the market sentiment think that the prices getting down around that 960, 965, very major support level, probably it was able to indeed attract demand back into the market. So we had that kind of get established in the early part of the week. And I think the second thing, Todd, that this is probably, I'm guessing, the third time the weather models have done this to the market is that they were mostly wrong. We did not see a wide swath of rainfall like the models predicted in the Western Corn Belt this week. And we never really saw heat leave the scene on the temperature. And in fact, we were coming back from southern Illinois down by Lawrenceville this week after taking a trip down there three days. And we were crossing Missouri last night at about 6 o'clock, and it was still 91 degrees. And I can tell you, it's still a good crop, don't get me wrong, but I can tell you that from when we went over on Tuesday to when we came back on Thursday night, those areas that missed the rains, that had that kind of heat setting on them, you could see a noticeable difference in the corn plant, especially as we came back on Thursday night. So I think the weather certainly helped, but I would lay almost 100, the rest of the balance of the 100% reasoning for the soybean bounce to the massive break in the dollar. Bank of Japan surprised the market. The Federal Reserve sounded cautious in their minutes. And then we had really poor U.S. GDP numbers on Friday morning. So essentially today's move in the dollar lower took out all of the gains or the rest of the majority of the gains that happened during the month of July. So that's a really nice way to end the month in the dollar, given that the D's corn is going to be down about 30 cents on the month. The beans in the November is going to be down about $1.50 on the month. And the wheat's going to be down about 40 cents on the month in the September contract.
Where do we go from here in your picture?
Well, the USDA report is almost everything to people I talk to in Chicago. And, you know, between major market analysts and also university people thinking that this corn crop is going to be at least as big as 2014, if not bigger than 2014, I don't think anyone of size in terms of investment funds, even with this weaker dollar, will really want to step in and buy into the corn market before they see USDA's yield number.
So if they don't, do we just stabilize where we are?
I think we play weather, and that's going to be played out mostly in the beans. And then, yes, when it comes to the wheat and when it comes to the corn, the feed grains in general, with prospects, thanks to the International Grains Council this morning coming out with fresh numbers that suggest that we will still have the production levels of 2014 to deal with around the world. I think we'll maybe stabilize in the feed grains, but really if you're going to play the long side and play weather, I think probably beans are your best bet.
I bet you've been getting calls from producers this week about the corn in particular and what they should do with their marketing after Darrell Good discussed that 15 billion bushel crop, a 2.5 billion bushel carryout. For those who missed that on Monday, we'll rerun it here very shortly.
Gosh, thanks a lot. Thank you for running that again, Todd. Appreciate that.
Oh, you're so welcome. How do you deal with it? And what do you tell producers?
Well, I'm a bit more optimistic on carryover, and I will feel a lot more optimistic at the end of this month on carryover. When we went through Effingham and down through Alney and Cowden and those areas to Lawrenceville this week, we were just shooting tassels, and they had just been out probably a few days. The silks were still yellow and still green and not really pollinated yet. So I'm encouraged by that from a standpoint that I'm thinking that maybe the 2014 national yield is going to be what we end up getting. I'm at 169.5 right now. I could push it to 171 and match up with 2014 if I had to. But I would be hard pressed in 20 days, especially if we keep this weather pattern we're in right now, to want to go over 2014 national yield. And if that's the case, given what the dollar's done and given the fact, I think it is a fact at this point, demand for feed grains is so much better than what it was back at this time during 2014. I really think that it's going to be hard to get that level of carryover of 2.5 billion bushels. And so it could happen. The USDA could say it in August. I'm not throwing that out at all. I think that's probably likely. The big thing to watch here in the next 2 weeks, if you're a producer, to answer your question, is crop conditions. You got two more reports before the USDA supply demand report. Those crop conditions start to fall, it adds to the likelihood that they don't have to bump the yield up as much. But we could be, if we're like 2014, heading into one of the most bearish reports of the crop year, and then dig ourselves out in that September-October timeframe when we find out exactly what's out there.
On the future side of the market, of course, we had a really good rally in the soybeans today. Is that also driven primarily by what happened with the dollar?
I think so, because you still have that 90% correlation in lead month soybean futures against lead month crude oil futures. So when we hit the 40-50 crude oil price and saw short covering when the dollar went lower, saw short covering in the crude, got back up to 41-50, that gives the sense that we don't need to go through the major moving averages any more than we already did in the crude oil. And I think that did help the soybeans quite a bit.
Can you see them holding steady above 10 bucks in the November contract?
You know, this is the tough part, because if you got to take that medicine and you see that Baker Hughes just put their rig count out just a few minutes ago, and they added 44 rigs last week in around the United States, and it was the most seen since April 2 years ago, essentially. We're now at a fifth straight consecutive week of rig count additions, and we're still about half of what we were a year ago. But I'm nervous that, yes, we can stay above $10 in soybeans if we keep weather on our side and we don't get the pod fill we need. But can we get back to that 1150 level? It's going to be really tough with the crude oil market probably still staying very vulnerable all the way into October, September, October, November. That's where I could see the crude oil market really wanting to turn around.
Thanks, Mike.
You bet. Thanks, Todd.
You too. Mike Zuzlow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Daryl Good, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Thanks for being with us, Daryl.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
Farmers have been distraught and worried both about the low prices and the fact that they believe they missed the highest prices maybe of the season, given what the size of the crop is now. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about supply and demand in particular for corn might be at this point.
Yeah, I think, the operative word on corn is big, we think. We've got the acres confirmed in the June report. Certainly the weekly crop conditions report, along with the weather pattern that we've had in July, all point to above trend yield at this point. So I'm thinking we're looking at a corn crop probably close to 15 billion bushels this year, and even with some increase in consumption in kind of across the board feed market, export, ethanol, that's not going to prevent a buildup in stocks, probably approaching 2.5 billion bushels by the end of the 16-17 marketing year, and that points to continued low corn prices for another year. Certainly in the low $3 range as an average, probably for the 2016-17 marketing year, somewhere around $3.35, $3.40 would not be a surprising average price. Central Illinois bids are below that now at this point, and probably will remain under pressure right into the harvest season.
We know that price times bushels is actually what we need to get to. So there will be a lot of bushels. Farmers often really only think of the price because that's what they see. But they've got to consider more carefully total amount of income that they'll be provided out of this. Do you have any advice for them on this front?
Well, you're right. I mean, a lot of farmers are going to have a lot more bushels per acre than they've had in recent years. It's always unfortunate that the production is not equally distributed across all producers, so there will be some with smaller crops. But in general, with the high yields, it says that we're not going to be able to store all of the crop probably in permanent storage. Certainly on-farm capacity is not going to be large enough to store as much as a lot of farmers want to store. So there's going to have to be some sales, I think, between now and harvest time or through the harvest period. And so those extra bushels that we have, getting those sold probably in the next few weeks is probably a good idea, because I think we will see some continued pressure on the futures and the basis probably into the harvest period. So if you're looking at an extra 20 or 30 bushels per acre that you normally don't have, probably no need to go ahead and get that priced and out of the way. But I think storing the crop is probably going to be the decision of choice and would be the one I would choose at this point. The dilemma is going to be that it may require a fairly long storage period to see a price recovery. I don't think it will be large or quick, but as we move into 2017 and another growing season, we will see, I think, some rebound in corn prices, and that's what we would be storing for at this point.
On-farm storage is an easy decision in that case. It's the commercial storage that becomes much tougher. How do you calculate it, and how long do you hold on to a crop in commercial storage?
Yeah, that's a good question, because out-of-pocket costs for commercial storage are not low. If you're going to spend probably to hold corn to next spring, you're going to spend 30 cents a bushel in many cases. And right now, the carry in the market is about that. If you look at harvest time bids plus a typical spring basis, there's about a 30 cent carry in the market. So commercial storage looks to be a break-even operation at this point, other than holding for just higher futures prices. So that's probably still have an opportunity to pay off on that, but it'll take obviously a much higher price recovery to recover off-farm storage costs than is the case for on-farm.
Thank you so much for taking the time, and we look forward to having many more conversations with you.
Thank you, Todd.
We spoke with University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good earlier in this week. We'll take up the storage issue during Commodity Week in just about 15 minutes here on the Closing Market Report. Stay with us if you can. Our panelists for that program include Amy Sage of the Andersons, along with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We also take a look at the difference between commercial storage and actually making a cash sale and potentially buying back a call option. Should be a good show for you to listen to. It comes up in the second half hour. If you can stay with us, it's already up on our website at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Be sure to stay with us if you can for the second half hour of the program. Commodity Week is coming up. Right now, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. Thanks, Eric, for being with us. Let's talk a little bit about the weather in the Midwest. We just finished up a pretty good heat wave.
Yeah, no, that heat wave we had last week, which kind of broke on Monday of earlier this week, was pretty intense. It was really hot in the Western Corn Belt. You know, we had temperatures there getting way over 100, heat indice values, you know, something like 110 to 115. You know, it was a scorcher, but then my goodness, that sucker shut down and the weather got nice. And it, you know, what was really different about this heat wave than many others was that it was pretty wet through the heat wave. And that really characterizes most of our summer, right? It was a hot and wet summer. You know, so when I look in the short term, you know, as we've cooled down here, you know, I've got a good chance of thunderstorms again today and possibly again tomorrow. And what that's really done is these regular thunderstorms we've had across the Corn Belt have really produced some garden spots. You know what I mean? These spots where the corn looks phenomenal. You know, if you look through the northern half of Illinois, you look at most of Iowa, southern Wisconsin, Minnesota, the crop looks just incredible. And that's thanks to the warmth and the wet, and that really you know, helps. But, you know, looking a little longer term here, we got to look into the first week of August. I do see another episode of heat that's coming up. We got a ridge that's building kind of centered over the Midwest. Thankfully, it's a pretty short duration event, just like every other heat wave we've had. Maybe August 2nd through August 5th, we start to see the 90s creep back into our area here, you know, around central Illinois with the hundreds in the western Corn Belt. But as I said, just like every other big heat wave we've had, it's been followed by a trough in the jet stream. And that kind of cools things back down. So that's what we're looking at in the short term. And going into this heat, you know, we're pretty wet.
What's the pattern a little bit further into the month of August? You said the jet stream starts to drop back down. Does that give us a northwest flow?
Yeah. So, you know, about this time of year, we get what's called the southwest monsoon starts to kick in. And basically, that's a flow pattern that brings a lot of moisture into the southwest, actually a lot of heat, too, into the southwestern United States. And that tends to build a ridge out west, just in general. And that tends to put us here in the eastern half of the country into what we call northwest flow. So when I look out over August, you know, I don't see any reason to say that we would have any sort of heat stress on the month. The flow pattern is what I would call transient. That means we have a lot of zonal flow. We have a lot of brief ridges followed by troughs. And that means nothing gets stuck. We don't build into any kind of stuck patterns that can bring a lot of heat or a lot of cool. But I'll tell you this, I'm concerned about August being a little bit wetter than average simply because of that flow pattern. And there's some places that desperately need it. Think Michigan, think Ohio, parts of northern Indiana, and also parts of the western Corn Belt. But in general, you know, that wetter pattern, you know, it could do a lot to help finish off the corn crop as long as it does dry out toward the end when we're trying to pull that crop back out. And I'll tell you, I looked at some of what beans really want August to look like. Honestly, beans really want things to be near average, but better to be a little bit cooler than average. But they also like to have kind of very close to average precipitation. They don't want wet, they don't want dry, but they do like a little bit of cool weather. Now, since we're talking about water and we're talking about precipitation, we just have to start at this time of year pointing our attention toward the tropics. Right now, we have two systems that have come off the west coast of Africa, two tropical waves, as we call them, that have the potential to kind of make their way into what we call the main development region in the Atlantic Ocean. So that's kind of the western Atlantic. That's also a region that maybe encompasses the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean. Now, right now, these waves are fighting a lot of dry and dusty air, which means that the thunderstorms that are trying to build into that air are not going to have a good chance at surviving. But what this signifies is the start of the tropical season. And I'll tell you, the Gulf of Mexico and the Caribbean are primed for tropical cyclone development. And as we start to worry about August precipitation, then of course September precipitation when we get into harvest, if we have a more active than normal tropical system, or tropical season I should say, any tropical system that gets in there may potentially push moisture up through the, you know, the mid-Mississippi River Valley. And if that happens, that could bring some untimely, very heavy rains, making it difficult to do much in the fields as we try to get the crops out of the ground. So a lot to be watching as we move into August, that's for sure.
We'll be looking forward to talking with you and seeing what happens again next week. Thanks so much, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's National Lasagna Day. It's also St. Martha's Day, patron saint of butlers, dietitians, cooks, innkeepers, and waitresses. On this day in agricultural history in 1796, Walter Hunt was born. He invented the first safety pin in 1849, which he called a dress pin. The pin was made out of brass wire about 8 inches long, coiled at the center and shielded at one end. He sold the rights to the pin for $400. By the way, Hunt began his inventing in his late teens with a machine to spin flax. In 1870, the first asphalt pavement was laid in the U.S. in Newark, New Jersey. In 1914, Baron Marcel Bic was born. A French inventor, he created the Bic pen in 1949. And in 1973, the Bic lighter. And in 1976, the Bic shaver. In 1977, Buffalo, New York declared this day Chicken Wing Day in honor of the famous Buffalo chicken wings created by Teresa Bellissimo in October of 1964. And in 1984, Fred Waring died. Waring provided financial backing for development of a blender to puree raw vegetables for his ulcer diet. The machine, originally introduced as the Miracle Mixer, debuted in 1937 and sold for $29.75. By 1954, the name had changed to the Waring Blender, and more than 1 million had been sold. And that's this day in agricultural history.
The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find our programming online at willag.org, on demand anytime you'd like. Again, the address is willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Secretary Vilsack has identified strengthening local and regional food systems as one of the four pillars of USDA's commitment to rural economic development. Part of this focus is on the middle of the supply chain. To that end, USDA is helping to make investments in this space. Those local food system investments aren't all targeted at producers or the people who raise the food. Some of it, says Sam Rickers, the administrator for USDA's Rural Business Cooperative Service, are aimed at the people in the middle of the supply chain.
Well, here's what we know. We know at USDA that while a huge part of the folks that we work for, and particularly at rural development, are the viability of Americans living in rural spaces, we know that strong connection between that urban and rural spaces and communities and businesses. So if we ignore the viability of the retail outlets where folks are consuming these goods, then we're not creating that pipeline for the growers that we support through other programs to have markets for their goods.
This governmental focus is very much about creating economic activity by stimulating farmers to produce and retailers to sell. Again, here's Sarah Eckhouse from AMS.
Local food at this point is an over $12 billion business, and it's expected to increase to $20 billion by 2019. So there's a real demand there, and to get that food from many of the rural communities to the urban areas that have such a high demand for it, we need those middle of the supply chain aggregators, processors, distributors, and there are real economic job-creating opportunities there.
Opportunities USDA has been funding. In the last 6 years, USDA invested more than $800 million in more than 29,000 local and regional food businesses and infrastructure projects. Those dollars have funneled through both rural development, that's Sam Ricker's agency, and through AMS, that's where Sarah Eckhouse works.
AMS also has the local food promotion program, which was created through the 2014 Farm Bill, which offers grants of up to $500,000 and also smaller planning grants that are helping with that mid-supply chain process, helping businesses or communities develop those resources, whether it's a food hub or a distribution network that are servicing and creating those urban-rural connections that are connecting people to the land that they have, that having that connection which they haven't had for such a long time.
USDA believes strong local and regional food systems are helping to revitalize rural and urban communities across the country. It points to more than 160,000 farmers and ranchers nationwide tapping into growing consumer demand for locally grown food products as an example
of this strength. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.